The date is October 28th, 2021. This weekend, Halloween weekend, you'll probably want to hole up and steer clear of zombies or avoid giving candy to children. Either way, you're going to have plenty of time to take in this episode of The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. In a few weeks, the DC Improv unofficially becomes the Wisconsin Improv. November 12th to the 14th, we'll have Pete Lee making his DCI debut in the main showroom. And over in our lounge showroom, we will have another DCI debut when Laura Bites takes the stage. Laura started her comedy career in the Midwest, mainly Chicago and Milwaukee, but she's been based in Los Angeles for the last few years. She had a really nice break when David Spade brought her in to do stand-up on his Comedy Central show Lights Out. She was also touring for a bit with Pete Holmes, opening shows for that great comedian. And she had maybe her biggest break when she won the praise of podcast and comedy superstar Joe Rogan. Rogan was very complimentary on social media about Laura's act. He even had her as a guest on the Joe Rogan Experience last spring, I believe in April. Among other things, they talked about Laura's recent success getting healthier. During the pandemic, she actually managed to drop 40 pounds. So, there is plenty to talk about. Joining us now from, I believe, Los Angeles, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Laura Bites. How you doing, Laura?
I'm good. Yes, I am in Los Angeles. That's correct. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. Now, LA is not your hometown. We're the weekend you're coming to town, we actually have two Wisconsin transplants. We have Pete Lee in one showroom and then you in the lounge showroom. Where are you originally from, Wisconsin?
Oh my gosh, I love Pete. Yeah, I'm from Milwaukee.
Were you born and raised in Milwaukee or Wisconsin?
Yeah, I'm from Milwaukee. Uh-huh. I was born and raised there.
And when did you get out?
I like popped around quite a bit. So I moved to Iowa, and then I moved back to Milwaukee, and then I lived in Philadelphia, and Ooh. Then I moved back to Milwaukee, and then I moved to Chicago, and then I moved to LA.
So you got a nice little tour of the Midwest and, of course, my hometown, the greatest city in the world, Philadelphia, before heading out to L.A. We get to talk to a lot of people who come out of the Midwest. It's a different kind of vibe of when you're starting comedy not on the coasts. How did you enjoy the Milwaukee comedy scene? Because that's really where you got your start.
Yeah, I loved it. And I got to go back there a couple times recently and, like, see a lot of those old faces. I just was so lucky because, like, it was a small enough scene where I could get a lot of stage time, but it was a big enough scene where I could get a lot of stage time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah. How many clubs are there to work? I mean, I know what we had, the situation we've had here in Washington for so many years, which is kind of still a comedy city on the way up. I mean, how many opportunities, what kind of places are you performing when you're going out in Milwaukee?
I mean, I didn't really work the clubs when I lived there because I was within my first 3 years of stand up, and I was really resentful about that at the time. But now looking back, I'm like, oh, I was like bad at comedy, and so that's why, you know what I mean? Like, everything feels so personal at the time, and then you look back and you're like, oh, that's probably because I was terrible at it. Got it. Yeah, so there was one club called the Comedy Cafe, which is no longer with us. Then there was another club called Jokers with a Z, of course. And I don't know if that club still exists, but it certainly did. When I was coming up in Milwaukee, it was a club in the basement of a strip club. And so you would like get people who would, you know, wander downstairs after they ran out of singles and would see the show. It was pretty rough. That was a pretty rough room.
Sometimes there's virtue in that, though, right? That if you can figure out how to make it work there, then the other stuff doesn't seem so bad.
Yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, I've been to, Comedy on State is a club in Madison where it's just, like, impossible to bomb. Like, I've never seen anybody have a bad set there. And it's really fun to do that, but, like, you don't get better that way. You know, and then if you go off into a room that's like not as gentle and forgiving, you're in for a rude awakening.
I've read interviews where you've talked about basically being interested in comedy and entertainment from a very young age. But was there any thought of another career kind of as you were coming out of school, getting into the professional world? Where were you headed before you made this wonderful detour into comedy?
Oh, I love that question. Yeah, I didn't like plan to be a professional comedian until it kind of was happening. I tried to find other stuff that I would be good at in life or something else that I would love in life. I got my degree. I double majored in psychology and philosophy and was going to go to grad school. And I mean, I hated it. I hated school. Like, that's the long and the short of it. I hated school. School was so hard for me for my whole life. I think I'm a smart person, and I just am not. I just hated school. I just hated the rigidity of it. And just, I mean, frankly, all the fucking work. School is so much work. And in college, it seems like it's more about who can put up with being the most tired. And like that's how you get, like, it's just, I hated school. Yeah, I started doing stand up, not thinking that I would become a comedian, any sooner than I would become a unicorn. But then it just kind of like one thing led to another, and I wasn't going to quit because I couldn't quit because I loved it so much. And now I'm a professional comedian, and I didn't have to go to grad school, thank God.
You know, it's funny. You say you hate school and you hate some of the, I don't want to say the work, but some of the rigor and the structure that goes into that. But for people who have maybe not heard the interview before, you've been on the Joe Rogan Experience, and that was one of your big breaks in the comedy world. And he very specifically praised you for your work ethic, how studious you are, kind of like your approach to writing, and how meticulous you were in approaching this in a very workmanlike way. So why does it work for you in comedy but not in grad school?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because as I was saying that, I was like, but I am a hard worker. Like, I was thinking that in the back of my head, I was like, I don't really have a problem with work. I mean, I write every day, I'm very disciplined, but I don't open my notebook of jokes and write every day until 3 in the morning. And I'm looking at my watch and I'm like, shit, I have 7 hours before my next hour is due. I have to keep writing through the night and just drink coffee, and I definitely have had nights like that, especially when I was like just starting out and I could not stop writing, and I would stay up until 5 in the morning and like practice my jokes into a mirror for the next open mic. Like I really was obsessed with it, but it's different when it's something that you love. And I mean, I think that's the whole point is like this doesn't really. The work that comedy is doesn't really feel like work, or it's like a different kind of work. I think it's different just in the same way that like it's different to sit in a cubicle at a job you hate for 8 hours versus like how I've heard like parenting is hard work, but also you like have a baby that you love, you know?
So I'm going to ask you a question that some people love and some people hate. So for example, I talked to Pete Lee a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about kind of what his I guess what his onstage brand is, what his onstage voice is. And he's does not shy away from saying it's Midwestern nice. That's kind of his brand. That's sort of the viewpoint that his humor comes from. Have you thought about, and not everyone has a easy stock answer to this question, have you thought about what your brand is on stage? What are your what if you're, if there's a short description for what you're trying to do?
I mean, Pete and I are from the same place, and we kind of play up our Midwesternness in very similar ways. Like, that's not how Pete talks. I don't want to blow his cover, but like, Pete the guy is much less hokey, and I'm the same deal. Like my onstage persona is just like an amplification of what I am in real life if I get really excited or really mad, really hyped up, then that's like more how I sound. But yeah, with both of us, it's like playing up the Midwesternness.
So if people have seen, like, one of the clips we have embedded on our website is you performing on David Spade's show on Comedy Central. And the voice you're doing, it's a great set, but the voice you're hearing in that set is not the voice I'm hearing right now through my headphones. It's pretty distinct. When did that kind of get incorporated into what you're doing? Did it take you a while to sort of fine-tune that or figure out how to maximize that for your show?
I mean, it wasn't a thing when I lived in the Midwest because like being Midwestern didn't set me apart when I lived there. But then when I moved to LA, people would comment on my accent a lot, and it kind of became like a thing that set me apart. And I also, full disclosure, I'm fresh out of a meditation right now. So my voice I'm hearing is like lower than it even normally is. I'm like ultra relaxed right now.
Your heart rate's like 25 beats per minute right now. You're just
it
barely.
Really is. Yeah. Yeah. So I started doing these like these Instagram videos called Cooking with Lara. And this was like years back. It's like going to be a real deep dig on my Instagram if you're so inclined. And they just were 15-second cooking videos. And I would like, and I would show how to make like a frozen burrito in 15 seconds, you know, or how to make like a bowl of cereal, like just so silly. And to pack anything into 15 seconds, like you have to talk really fast. And so it was me, but it was talking really fast. And when you talk fast, your voice gets higher. And kind of the voice that I used on that became like my stage voice. I think I just was in like a particular mood one night where I was feeling really silly. And I was like, I'm going to try. I had just like a new bit and I just like turned my voice up a little bit and it worked really well. And so then I kind of just like let that bleed into the rest of my act and it worked really well. And even after, like after COVID, doing a set back after being on like a 7 month, you know, like everything being shut down for like 7 months. And I mean like everything being shut down. Cause then after that I was doing like, you know, outdoor shows and stuff.
Right.
But in LA, like everything was shut down for a really long time. And then I tried to like perform in my normal voice. I was like, I wonder if like my material is solid enough now that I can just use my normal voice. And I did it in like, it just didn't hit the same way. Huh. Like people love that silly little voice. And so I just like, I keep using it.
Do you view it as a blessing or a curse? I guess you can look at it a couple ways, right? It's not your natural voice. So it's something you have to get consciously engaged in, but it's also distinctive. It's very, very memorable. So it's something that people can definitely, it's like a calling card, I guess.
I don't know. It's like, I did music before I did stand up and they talk about finding your voice in that too, like finding your actual voice. And so I think that this just is my voice.
Yeah.
And I mean, it can change, it can evolve, but it's like, I am doing an act, I am performing. And so who I am on stage is a character. It's a character that's very closely based on me. I mean, it's me, but I think it's okay to be a little bit of a character because like people are coming to see a show. They're not coming to like get to know me. Who cares who I am, you know?
I care. Come on. You seem very pleasant.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. So you're just getting off of a meditation. You've also talked a lot on your social about some of the transformations you've put yourself through in, I guess, the last few years, getting a better shape, better mental shape, better physical shape, and that sort of stuff. How hard was it for you to, something like meditation, I've never tried. It seems so intriguing. I feel like everyone could benefit from it when you're reading about it. How hard is it to kind of incorporate that into particularly the kind of lifestyle you have as an entertainer, where the schedules can be weird and the hours can be odd or the travel can be grueling? How do you keep that kind of discipline and that focus doing what you do?
Honestly, it's easier to incorporate it than it is not to incorporate it. Like it makes my life easier. And I don't do it perfectly, especially when I'm on the road, it's tough. Just to like find 20 minutes. Cause especially flying from like the West Coast to the East Coast, you lose 3 hours. So if it's like a connected flight, you can leave on like a 5:40 a.m. flight, which means you had to wake up at, you know, 1 a.m. So like I woke up like 2:30 in the morning for flight, you know, and then not get there until 4:30 in the afternoon. And then you have to, you know, get to the hotel, get something to eat, hopefully get a little bit of a nap and a shower. And it's just like, it's hard to create that time. I don't want to say there's not time because the time is there, but yeah, it's hard to carve it out for that sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's so worth it. I mean, I've never meditated and been like, man, I shouldn't have used that 20 minutes to meditate. Man, I really regret meditating before that meeting I had. I wish I hadn't been so centered for that. You know, something that was like the biggest thing that helped me when I started meditating is like, always felt like I was doing it wrong or like I was going to do it wrong because I would think about other stuff. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And a friend of mine told me, like, even if your mind wanders the entire time and your thoughts are racing with like other things the entire time, that's still a perfect meditation because it's still your body releasing stress.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's just about like having 20 minutes where like if I need to have all these thoughts going through my head, then at least I have 20 minutes where that's all I'm doing and
Yeah.
I'm not also like looking at my phone or, you know, making a meal or cleaning or doing whatever else I would be doing. And so yeah, it just feels really good.
How long have you been doing it now? How long have you been meditating for?
A couple years now.
Yeah. It's like I said, it is one of those things that so you hear a lot of people talking about, and some people just dismiss it as kind of garbage, but then other people talk about how transformative it can be kind of for their peace of mind. I find it just very intriguing, for lack of a better word. Yeah. So,
Yeah, it like I feel like it like puts like a protective like pocket of air between me and the rest of the world. Are you hearing my cat meowing
I
right
am
now?
hearing your
I'm
cat
so
meowing.
sorry.
That's quite all right.
Please stop
Does your
it.
cat need to meditate? It sounds like your cat needs to just relax for 20 minutes and chill out. Yeah.
It's because I'm not petting her. That's
Ah.
like all that that is about right now.
So
It's a tantrum because I'm not petting her. And if she would come over here, I would pet her, but I'm not going to get up and walk into the other room to get closer to her meowing because it's already created a disturbance. It's more of one now. The longer I talk about it, the more of a disturbance it has become.
Very good. I want to ask you about one of your big kind of breaks in comedy. Like I said, you've been doing comedy for a few years in Milwaukee. You weren't plucked from the wilds by guys like Joe Rogan or Pete Holmes, but you had kind of a. I think it's safe to say that your appearance on Joe Rogan's podcast and the nice post he put about you is a huge boost to what you're doing. I know just in terms of if you're measuring in terms of like social media followers, it goes through the roof. You have access to one of the biggest comedy fan bases in the world all of a sudden, all with all their kinds of eyes on you. I've never had such a kind of a cool thing happen. What's it like to be on that roller coaster? I mean, you're doing all this work, and all of a sudden, it's like a tidal wave of attention and improved success. What's that like? How do you process that as a comedian?
I mean, it's really crazy. It's really crazy. And especially like being spending so much of my adult life just like struggling and being poor and living in scarcity. And now to where like stuff is coming in, there is a part of me that the biggest part of me that I'm like grappling with now is the part that's like afraid that it's going to stop coming in or
Yeah.
that it's going to go away. And it's been long enough now where it's like, this is what I do for a living. I'm not just going to like stop getting booked. Like I'm doing the work, you know? I think that when this career like goes south for people, it's when like they're not writing new stuff. You know what I mean? And I'm doing the work. But yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy because like being in the mode of like just like I mean, I was working a minimum of 40 hours a week and doing like 34 shows in a month when I lived in Chicago. And so I'm used to just like digging and just having no like
Yeah.
time and just being in scarcity. And so now it just doesn't really feel real yet. It just doesn't really feel real yet. It feels like I've missed something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm still at the point where I'm like trying to stop waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Just accept that this is the new reality for you, right?
Yeah, except that I don't have to go work at Shopper Track anymore.
Why would you give up such a sweet gig? It sounds awesome.
That actually was not a bad gig, I'll have you know, but that's neither here nor there.
So, like I said, you talked about how some of the ethic of what you're doing on stage is always kind of rooted in the Midwest, but you've been away. You've been living in LA for a few years, and I know people don't go native necessarily when they go to California, and you've been through the pandemic. But how much has the kind of the last few years, and including your recent success, I mean, does that shape what you're doing on stage now? Does it kind of take you away from those kind of the whatever that those Midwestern roots, or what sort of stuff is kind of coming into the act nowadays?
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so funny. I was working on some new material and I ran it by my friend recently. And he was like, it's hilarious to me now that your material is from the perspective of the rich person, like the rich people. And like, I'm not rich. It just is like, I've had these like really nice hotel rooms being comped and like, you know, like really nice flights being taken care of. I've been able to have some experiences where I have lived like a rich person and I write jokes about my experiences, you know? And so I wrote this stuff and then I was like, yeah, this is not relatable. Like people are just going to think I'm an asshole. And it was like, I don't know. Yeah.
One of the other people that you've worked with, I believe, over the years is Pete Holmes, correct? You've worked with him quite a bit on the road?
Yeah, I love Pete.
Yeah, we've had Pete. It's been a few years since we've had Pete at the club, but I find it interesting that you were talking about meditation earlier. He's very much into disciplining your mind, and he's a very thoughtful guy. Is that where you get some of the meditating stuff from? Did it come through him, or have you talked with him about that sort of stuff?
Oh yeah, I've definitely talked with him about that. Yeah, I was meditating before Pete and I ever met, but that's like one of the things, one of the points where we like connected on that. And I think we do it differently, but yeah, Pete is like so gentle and present and fun. And that's like one thing that made it really fun. Yeah, because I was his feature act. We were touring around before COVID hit. Yeah, we just very much were on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
And it was really pleasant. Yeah.
Very cool.
You realize it's not a very exciting answer. You're like, yes, I was content and it was pleasant. But that's, I don't know, that's one of those things where it's like when I was younger, that wouldn't have sounded exciting to me. You know, I didn't want like contentment. I wanted to feel like ecstatic all the time. And now I'm like, I really like just feeling nice. I've gotten really into like comfortable pants now, just like soft fabrics. I like care so much less about how I look and so much more about just like how stuff feels. I just want to feel nice.
I think that's a very nice way of putting it. That's very, very noble aspiration. That said. You have, even if you're learning to be comfortable with what you have, with where you are, you have, as you said, had at least some taste of the rich life. What's a perk that you could definitely get into when you're hanging with the people who are the uber successful in the comedy world, the Joe Rogans, the Pete Holmes, these guys are kind of at the top of the world. What aspects of that lifestyle are like, yeah, I could get into that.
So two things where like it's changed me already is like extra legroom on a flight and a nice hotel room versus like a not nice hotel room. Oh. Those are things where now it's like, if I have the money, I will spend the extra money to have like 3 more inches of legroom on a flight or like stay in a nicer hotel room. There's just like such a huge difference. Especially just because like I'm flying every weekend and I'm staying in hotels every weekend. Yeah. You know, I spend like a lot of my life there.
I don't think people who have never worked, as they say, a touring feature act in the Midwest, do not appreciate how bad some of the hotel accommodations can get to be.
You just don't know how bad it can be. I actually was really hard because I did, you know, a string of arena shows with Joe Rogan, where like, obviously, I mean, it's the nicest, that's as nice as it gets.
Yeah, right.
And the following weekend, I did a club where I got put up in this hotel room and I walked across the, and I mean, all my stuff smelled like a cigarette for a week afterwards. And I walked through the hotel room in bare feet. And then I stepped on the bath mat in the bathroom and there was like a gray footprint on the bath mat from my feet. So it was like really hard to go from, you know, from the previous weekend to then doing that the exact next weekend.
It's amazing. So you're saying we should take you out of the Econo Lodge in downtown DC? We should probably.
Is that where I'm staying?
No.
I just like to know ahead of time.
No. It's very nice. It's an AC hotel. It's very
Okay.
nice. Very new. European style toilets. It's very exciting stuff. Yeah. It's
What about the toilets?
European style. It's a Spanish company, and so they have weird toilets. They're like square shaped. It's a little
They
different.
flush up your butt.
Yes, they
It's
flush it
those
out.
ones.
Yeah, no, I don't know if there's bidet functions, but yes, they're very modern and styled. So
They
that's
have
this.
bidet. Yeah, I guess they don't call it they flush up your butt.
That's essentially we're talking about. So no, it's a very nice hotel. You'll be fine. It's right across the street from a Wawa, but a very nice Wawa. So don't worry. Yeah.
Oh
Yeah.
my God, you guys have Wawas in DC?
Yeah.
Oh man.
It's happening. I'm sh well. You spent some time in Philadelphia, so you know the legend of Wawa. There you go. So,
Oh, I have ordered many a computerized sandwich.
yes, the Vine, the touchpad ordering device. Yes, it's right across the street. If you want to go down memory lane, you could do it basically every day that you're here, November 12th to the 14th. It'll be a blast.
Oh
Trust
my
me.
gosh,
Yeah,
I will.
yeah. So that and fancy toilets that might or may not flush up your butt. So either way,
Terrific.
it
The
should be a good
toilet
time.
flushes me.
Well, Laura, I'm going to let you go in just a second. For anyone listening to this who's not yet convinced that they want to come see you at the Improv this November, what's the elevator pitch? You've been living in LA for a few years. You should have mastered the elevator pitch by now. Why should people come see you at the DC Improv November 12th to the 14th?
Oh, I mean, because I'm really funny. Yeah, no, I haven't mastered that, I guess. I don't know, I'm very funny. Come out if you want to see that. Watch the David Spade clip first,
Yes.
and I'm not as dirty as that usually. That clip actually was my manager was like, do your dirtiest material now because you can say whatever you want on this show and you can't say whatever you want on other shows. So, yeah, I don't know. Watch it, and then if you think I'm funny, come out.
Laura, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us. Appreciate it, and we will see you in November.
Thank you so much. See you soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Laura Bites. She's at the DC Improv Lounge, November 12th through the 14th, and tickets are available at dcimprov.com. That's two shows on Friday, two shows on Saturday, one show on Sunday. Go get some. Also, if you want to find Laura online, her Instagram and Twitter handle is her name. It's at Laura Bites. Let me spell it for you. LaraBeitz. LaraBeitz. Heck, go do that deep dive on her Instagram. Find out how to cook a burrito in 15 seconds. It'll be educational. And with all that said, let's wrap this up so you can get back to boarding up your doors to keep out either zombies or kids seeking a handout, whatever you prefer. Our thanks to Laura Bites for taking the time to chat with us. Our thanks to you for taking the time to listen. Hey, we would really love to see you for Wisconsin Takeover Weekend. That's November 12th through the 14th. But whatever you're doing this November, we sincerely hope you're finding some time to laugh. We'll catch you next time on the other side.